the to-do list of the Semi-Adult Podcast with Ray from Ray's Days and Jules from Ob and Lovin, where we talk about never having it totally together, but faking it anyway.
Hi, Ray.
Hi, Jules. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. How was your day today?
It was full of work and then the grocery store and then cooking. So busy, I guess. Normal, yeah. Busy.
Yeah, sounds like it.
How was your day?
It was good, except I did not go to the grocery store, but you know, it was full of work and cleaning up the house a little bit and stuff like that. Also normal busy.
You just finished your drawing class, right?
Oh, yeah, I did. My last class was yesterday, and it was really, really fun. I really liked it, and so we did our final projects and, like, posted everyone's final projects, and it was really cool to see everyone's drawings because they're all so different. Like, people have really different styles and do different things, so that was really cool, and I posted about that, just about what I did for my final projects. I drew some of the characters from Twin Peaks because I think they all have really interesting looks to them.
Oh, I saw that. I thought that was really cool.
Thanks.
Yeah, I feel so like
I had a really good time.
They look really professional and like a legitimate, you're like a legitimate artist.
Yeah, I feel more legitimate. Like I think I improved a lot in this class. And I learned how to do a new medium and learned how to do markers. And I really, really like those a lot. And so I think I will keep using those and keep drawing and just keep practicing. But yeah, I think I definitely got better. It's like kind of cool to see progression like that, I think.
I feel like your use of markers to show light is really good. Like, your shadows and your light are all really spot on. And then I had a question because I think it was the fourth drawing that you did for your final project, which everyone can find on raisedays.com. There was like a brown sweater on a man. Did you do different color browns or was that just different weights of marker?
Both. It's I used two different color browns. So I did like a really, really light brown over the whole thing and I added some shadows to that. And then for the lines, I took a different color brown and went over every like diagonal. Okay. And then I went across the other diagonals with that brown again. So like it's the darkest browns are like where they overlap like two or three times. And then the lighter brown is just like it overlaps twice.
Okay.
And the very lightest brown is just one. So it's like layering the color on a little bit, but I did use two different browns.
That's really cool.
Yeah, I really like how it came out. And then after I was done, I was like, wow, that was kind of difficult. So, with marker drawings, it's really easy to like, if you mess up, you can just redo them because the paper is translucent, like you can see through it, and so you can just trace on top and like start again basically.
Okay.
Which is really cool. But after I did that sweater vest, I was like, oh wow, I really don't want to have to redo all this because it took like a little while. But I like the way it turned out. So
I liked his beard too.
Thank you. I thought it might be like a little too cartoony. Like I don't know how to make it look more like, I mean he's got kind of a full beard and I like exaggerated it, but I don't know if it. Anyway, I was concerned about his beard looking a little too cartoony, but I kind of like it because he's, like, weird and he's, like, a little, like, exaggerated cartoony drawing anyway, so I think it's, like, fine. But if I had to do, like, a normal person's beard, I, like, don't really know how to do that yet.
Beards are hard. I mean, just yeah, in life, yeah. I feel like they're hard.
Yeah.
Let alone trying to, like, capture them in a drawing.
Yeah, I was, like, looking through with my, like, drawing teacher. We were, like, looking through this drawing book to see if we could find examples of beards. And this particular book didn't have any, but I'm sure there's some out there that can tell you how to do more realistic-looking facial hair. But, yeah, it was cool. It was fun.
Will you take another class with this teacher?
She only teaches a fashion illustration class, but some people take it more than once. But I might take some other classes, but probably not right away. I'll probably wait until the spring. But yeah, I'm definitely thinking about some other classes.
Cool.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so that was fun. That was yesterday. Yeah.
What else is going on?
Not too much, really. Just regular work and life stuff. Now most of our traveling's over.
Yeah. Yeah, we have two more weekends of stuff, and then we're done for the summer, and I'm really excited.
Yeah, that will be nice to just hang out.
Yeah. AJ has promised to help me with our wedding albums that I still have to finish, so that will get done, hopefully, before I go home to California.
Yeah. That will be good.
Do you want to talk about this article you read today?
Yeah, I do. So this morning I saw people all over Twitter kind of talking about this article in the Wall Street Journal about presence, which is kind of like charisma, but a little more weight, I think. And it's kind of like the presence you have at work or in social situations or online where people listen to you and notice you and listen to what you have to say.
So it's sort of like being remembered.
Yeah. Yeah. Like being remembered but not in like an obnoxious way where like, oh, that annoying person like talks loud at all these meetings. Like that's not exactly what I think. It's more like a respected weight where people notice you and
value you to say good what things. You have
yeah,
to
value
say.
You. Exactly. Yeah. It's like more valued. Yeah. So it was kind of an interesting article and which I've heard before about like a lot of CEOs have this like charisma and that allows them to like get to the next level and not everyone has that or can do that. And it's kind of an interesting thing. This article talks more about it in the workplace and kind of online, not just like social. Like, you know, a lot of movie stars have that like charisma.
Mm-hmm.
So this article is kind of talking about it like also in professional situations or even on the internet, which like how do you have presence on the internet? I don't really know. But it kind of talks about it, which is interesting. And it has different tips about, I guess they kind of condense it down into how you behave, how you speak, and how you look. It's this quote in this article.
Oh, yeah. And okay. So I read that.
Like adds up. Yeah. Yeah. And so I don't know. It got me kind of thinking about that idea of having presence, especially at work or even online, and especially like as a woman at work, too. It can be kind of tricky.
Right. I feel like we constantly have to toe the line of having some emotion but not having too much emotion.
Yes, yeah.
Because you don't want to be looked at as being impulsive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And sometimes I find that really hard. I feel like my presence is really low because my goal at work is to, like, not make waves and just, like, keep my head down and do my job.
Yeah.
But that, I think it would be harder to be, if I was in a different sort of office, I think it would be harder to be thought of as one to be promoted because of that. Because I'm, like, everyone always says I'm very quiet at work because I just, like, work.
Right.
Do you feel like you have presence at work?
Interesting. I think I don't, I mean, it's kind of hard to tell, I guess. I think I do because a little bit, I don't know, because at meetings and stuff like that, I'll speak up and chime in on certain things.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll, you know, like jump in and make sure that, or I try to make sure that like people can hear what I'm saying and that it's heard by someone. But I don't know if I don't have like gravitas, you know what I mean? So I don't know really, but it's kind of harder now. I think I was kind of wondering how this affects this idea because now I'm in a different office than a lot of people that I work with.
And oh so yeah. You're like working remotely most of the time.
Yeah. And so how do you have presence on a phone call? Like, that's like a totally different ballgame. So I feel like a lot more people can like ignore me or not even know that I'm there because I'm not in the room. So I'm kind of, I don't know, thinking about different ways that just like the influence of that. I don't really know.
Well, let's talk about, so in the print edition of the Wall Street Journal, there was a chart that talked about how to create, how to build your presence. So some of the tips are at work to look polished, to make eye contact and find a low and clear vocal tone, to have bullet points prepared but to speak off the cuff a little bit, to ask for honest feedback from your boss or colleagues, and be consistent with your smile. Is that real?
I don't know. I don't really get that last category. I don't know what the smile category means. But I mean, be consistent. And also mentions like master being grace, having grace under fire, which I do think is really important.
I think so too. Because,
you know, those crazy people that you deal with either at work or school or out wherever who like fly off the handle and are like totally outrageous or just say nasty things or yell or like whatever. It's like that is the opposite of presence. You're just freaking out.
Yeah.
And some people I work with, I think like are always calm and collected. And even when things are like going crazy, they just are still very calm and can make decisions quickly and, you know, move fast, but don't lose it ever, which I always kind of strive for. It's like so hard, you know?
Yeah. AJ and I have talked about that a lot, about people who can maintain their cool under stressful situations. And if part of mastering that involves like not caring as much.
Yeah, I definitely think you have to have a kind of distance. Like, you can't take it personally, and you can't – it's kind of hard because it's like you, on one hand, want to be really passionate about what you do, and the ideal is to, like, be passionate about your work. But then on the other, it's like it's work, and you go there to do a job, and
you if you're too invested, yeah, right, and if like you're too invested, you're going to get defensive about your work, yes, and then it's just going to break down.
Yeah, yeah.
I think it also depends on, like, the sort of office environment you're in, because, like, the job that I have now is one of the few jobs that I've had where I feel like my opinion matters and that people care about what I think about things that are minor or major. And, like, because of that, I feel more comfortable, like, expressing my points of view and, like, getting a little bit defensive about things, or at least, like, asking questions to find out why things are a certain way.
Yeah.
But at other places I've worked, I feel like I couldn't do that at all. Like, so I think like you have to kind of adapt for your office environment a little bit.
Yeah. No, I think that's a good point too. Yeah. I think I have at my job, because I work as an editor and we have a lot of different deadlines during the day, and I think I've had a lot of practice of trying, like, you have to stay calm to get this article out. And sometimes I mess up and I freak out, and that's when I make mistakes, which definitely happens still. But I try to block everything else out and focus and get this article out because I have to, because it's our deadline. And I'm trying to apply that to, like, other situations too. Or, like, at meetings, if someone says something that, like, makes you crazy, it's like you still have to. I try really hard to just stay professional at least. And I think that's like a lot of what this is just being professional. It's like you don't yell and you don't say mean things, or you don't, I don't know, you're not flippant. Like, you are there and a professional, and so you stay calm and you handle your work, you know? I think that's a good thing, and that can give you some presence too.
My favorite tip in this work category is the it says exactly, prepare bullet points, not a script, drop the props, especially the PowerPoint. And I think that that's all about like being authentic.
Yeah, that's a good point too.
Like, don't read from a script. Just like have your points made, but talk as if you are having a conversation and be yourself. Yeah. And I think that people in general can see through fakeness really quickly.
Yeah.
And
that's
so
a really good point.
I think, and I feel like that online too, like I feel like it's really important to be authentic online. Like if you're trying to write with a different voice, it's not gonna sound, people are gonna see that, people are gonna feel that, and they're not gonna want to read your blog or your tweets or whatever.
Yeah, I think people really connect with that too, because people are really impressed when they see somebody else comfortable in themselves,
mm-hmm.
and comfortable enough to speak in their own voice, whether it is in an email or on the phone or in tweet or whatever. And so I think people really respect that and really connect with that, and that can help you. I mean, part of presence too is like people see you for who you are and respect that. Like that's a big part of it too. And so you have to show that. I think part of, I don't know, kind of going along with that is not being afraid to say what you have to say. Like a lot of people cushion stuff and go on and on because they're like worried about how it will come off. And especially in emails, that can be really difficult. And then no one reads your email because it's like way too many sentences.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And so I think if you're clear and concise and just say what you need to say and get to the point quickly, but respectfully, you don't, I mean, it's not, you don't ever have to be nasty. You're just professional and clear and quick. Then I think that can help too.
Yeah, I think I know that I really respect when people can get to their point quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And I really respect efficiency. And so I feel like when someone is rambling, I just like am concentrating on them rambling and not concentrating on what they have to say.
Right.
But I think I struggle with that because I tend to like over repeat myself. Like I'll make a point and then say it five other different ways to make the same point that I just made.
Yeah.
And so I like struggle with that too. And I think sometimes it comes across as condescending because I like overstate it, but really I'm just trying to be really super clear.
Right. Yeah. Well, so, I always think it's better to be over clear than under clear, but I do see your point of repeating yourself.
Yeah. I feel like, well, and here I'm doing it again. Once I make a point and I keep saying it, it loses its effectiveness.
Yeah, that can be true too.
What about this asking for feedback? Do you feel like you can ask for feedback from your boss?
No, I mean, I don't, maybe like my direct manager, I could. I think sometimes I don't really like the idea of asking for feedback like that in a work environment because I think it's like it needs to be someone who I guess you're really close with who can like you can have an honest conversation with. And I guess I don't really feel that way about a lot of people that I work with. But I was kind of thinking right now I send a lot of my edits back to the writers, and you need to have a good relationship with them, and you're sending back these edits, and sometimes they can get upset about the edits.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to build your trust so that they trust your changes and trust what you're doing, and you have to send it back and talk to them in a way that shows that you respect what they're doing and this isn't a bad thing. You know, we're just like looking at their writing and trying to make it better. And so some people can react kind of different ways. So I didn't really think about presence in that context about like I need people to believe what I'm saying and trust me in that way and like talk to them in a way that has presence, I guess, because it's kind of, you know, a difficult relationship sometimes.
Yeah,
so sometimes I ask about that, about like how can I bring this up with someone or talk to them about this thing because, you know, being edited can be – it's like kind of difficult sometimes.
Yeah, yeah. I am edited for my job.
Mm-hmm.
And when I first started working there, I felt like my boss is sort of a heavy-handed editor, which is – totally fine, but I felt like I didn't realize that, and so I thought he was just like heavily editing my work because it needed so much improvement. But he just does that for everyone. And as soon as that became clear to me, I was like, fine with it. Like, oh, yeah, rewrite it all you want. You know, like, that's fine. As long as you're rewriting it equally and I'm not, like, the worst of everyone.
Right, right. Yeah.
So, but I feel like asking for honest feedback, like, I don't know if – do you have annual reviews?
Yeah, we do. We have reviews. So I guess that's feedback. It's not usually on how we I haven't really talked about, like, how I relate to other people, but I guess that is a thing that people address in reviews, you know. It's like you need to be able to – like, if you're a manager, you need to have a weight with your people that you're managing.
Yeah, I feel like – asking, I feel like if you just go to your boss tomorrow and you're like, hey, like, how am I doing? That's like really putting him or her on the spot. But if you're in the context of like your annual review, then that's like an okay time to do that. And yeah, like if they're doing their job, you'll get honest feedback anyway.
Yeah, that's a really good idea too. I think too, if you have a specific problem, like, I have concerns that I can't bring up my issues in this meeting because everyone talks over me, or I don't know when to bring up this point or something. Like, that's a specific problem you can address. Yeah. And it's not just asking, like, what's wrong with my presence? Like, right. No one will know what to say to that. But if you have, like, a specific thing you're worried about, or, like, if no one's taking your phone calls or something, like, how do you get people to respond to you quickly? Like, that's a thing that you can address.
Well, I also feel like when I first started working in Pennsylvania, the court system, when I was a newspaper reporter, the court system was a lot different than anywhere I'd ever worked as a reporter. So I didn't know what the heck I needed to do or how I needed to approach some of these hearings that I had to cover. And I remember going to my boss and being like, I don't understand this. I don't know how to do it. And she said at the time that she was very impressed that I was willing to come with her and come to her and tell her what I didn't know. Like,
yes.
And so I think that if you approach a problem in that way, like, I don't know how to handle this, can you help me? Like, I feel like that's much, you're going to get a better response than just like whining or complaining or being petty or getting defensive. Like, just act. I mean, sometimes you just have to play stupid a little bit and it sucks, but that's how it is.
Yeah. Well, and I think too, like, taking responsibility for what your words and what you know and don't know is huge. And that gets you a lot of respect too. And like, if you mess up, the fact that you like come clean and say like, I made a mistake and it was my fault quickly and to the point, and instead of talking around it or over it or excusing it or whatever, like, that can build you a lot of respect too. And because you're, again, it's the whole thing about, like, you're comfortable with yourself and you know that this, like, one mistake isn't the end of the world and you need to address it quickly and move on. And then you move on and then it's fine. But I think a lot of people struggle with that. So if you see someone do that, it's kind of impressive.
Yeah. Okay, so the next section of this chart is how to increase your presence in social situations.
Yeah.
And the first one is a signature style helps leave a mark. And I don't think I have a signature style.
I feel about this one. I mean, I think not many people have one look or one particular thing they do like every day. Like, I don't know like how consistent they want you to be, but I think if you're, again, true to yourself and portraying yourself in a way that you're comfortable and you feel good in and is appropriate, then that's,
you translates. Know, enough
to, yeah, that kind of translates too. But I will say, I know someone, one of my friends at work has a very distinct style, just a personal style, and that impressed me about her before we even like talked and became friends, because she dressed in a way that was distinctly her and was always looked good and put together and every single day. And so it, and you know, it's like no one else would wear that because it was it was like very much her style and herself. And so that, I mean, there's something to be said for that too, I think.
Yeah, I don't think it necessarily has to be like fashion, or at least that's what I'm telling myself, because like I feel like I have big curly red hair and that is probably enough.
I was thinking about that actually when you said you didn't have a distinctive style. I was like, everyone knows your hair.
Yeah. So I think that maybe you could manipulate that in other ways, or, you know, you wear chunky jewelry or whatever. Like, I don't think it necessarily has to mean that all your clothes have to be curated for different styles.
I agree. Or even, like, glasses that you like and feel good in.
Or yeah.
A lipstick or shoes or, you know, or a purse or just, like, something that you feel good in that's comfortable and, I don't know, appropriate to the situation.
The next tip was, before a party, think of some conversation topics among likely guests. And I feel like that's such a good tip.
Yeah.
AJ is really, really good at parties. Like, I am not good. I am quiet and don't really want to talk to people I don't know. And he is so good at working the room. And he does that. Like, occasionally I'll bring up something and he was like, oh, that was a conversation topic that I forgot to mention. Like, he thinks of topics before he goes places.
I'll have to try that next time I go out somewhere.
Yeah, yeah. We have a party on Saturday, so I'm trying to think of things I can talk about with people.
Yeah. I feel like, too, I saw online when I was looking at this article, it talks about, like, introverts versus extroverts.
Oh, yeah?
And I don't think that extroverts automatically have greater presence. Like, I don't think that's a thing. And I think a lot of introverts have a lot of presence because when they do speak, they say something that's really important and, like, worth hearing. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, if you're out in a social situation, it's usually a lot easier for extroverts to, like, go mingle and not be exhausted and not be as stressed out. So I think it can be kind of a struggle sometimes if you are introverted or if you have anxiety in social situations. And so it takes practice. Like, I don't think you're, like, stuck with it if that's how you feel. I think it just takes practice and trying it. And sometimes it goes better than others, you know. But
sometimes, though, I mean, sometimes you're right. Like, I remember being fascinated with – there was this kid that went to my high school who was super smart and super quiet, and he was so shy that one time we had to get a presentation in class and he refused to do it and he just took the F because he did not want to speak in front of people. But when he talked, everyone listened because it was so rare for him to do it, and that probably even put more pressure on him because he was so shy. Because, you know, he couldn't say anything without the room going quiet. But I think that's true, that there's something disarming with someone who's usually quiet, speaking their mind. Disarming in a good way. Like,
yeah,
it makes people pay attention to them.
Yeah, I think so too. And part of what this article talked about is, like, speaking in a low tone. And I think even probably in low volume sometimes too, of like, you don't, like, the loudest person isn't necessarily the person with the most charisma or the most presence,
which isn't the loudest person usually, like, the most annoying person.
Or they, like, they're so unsure about what they're saying, or they're, like, yelling to convince people or to make a fuss or to get noticed, and it's like, you don't have to do that to get what you, like, I don't know, to get what you need to get done. You shouldn't have to, like, cause a fuss always.
It feels like it's almost like compensation, like,
yeah.
And it's, like, very obvious insecurity to me.
Yeah, I think so too. I think too, part of not freaking out is being okay when you don't get things you need. Like, you have to be okay sometimes to, like, wait on stuff or to have it not go your way. You need to not get upset and not freak out and not whatever. And so it's like, you need to, I think, or try to, like, understand that, like, I would be awesome if this worked out, but if it doesn't, like, that's okay. Well, and oddly, I think that kind of gets you more often than not, it works out then.
Yeah. And I do think, like, I think that's part of the grace under fire. Like, when you don't get what you want, or you know something is unfair and you handle it with grace, it,
yes,
people will see that. Like, you have to trust that people will see that.
Yeah, I think that's a good point, too. Yeah.
But I wonder, I'm wondering, like, this whole article about having presence and being charismatic, I feel like it's all about, like, general standards of professionalism.
I totally was thinking that, too.
And so, like, is it just, like, a generational thing where we have to be reminded and it has to become this game of who can be the most present, who can have the most presence?
I don't think so. I think this is for, like, everyone. Like, I think it's for, like, older people and younger people, too. But you know what, though? I think that a lot of people just aren't professional.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of people just aren't. And so even if you just have, like, a little bit of being professional, get your job done, and be professional to everyone you work with. Like, that is a lot of what people, not everyone does that all the time.
Yeah, I think that too. And like, I know that, so I had to go to a notary this week to get something signed. And I sent an email to my bank where the notary was to make sure that they could notarize this form. So I, like, sent this email, and it was fairly professional, and the response I got was favorable but not written professionally, and that, like, automatically turned me off. Like, I'm just like, okay, well, can you match my level here?
Right. Yeah. I was thinking a lot about being professional. And I just think it's, like, a way to show that you respect the people that you're talking to and working with, because mm-hmm. we all have jobs to do, and they are people, too, and we just are there to work and get this job done. And, like, you respect what they're doing and their time and are treating them like people who also have jobs to do. And so, you know, I think if you just remember that during your day, it helps a lot.
Well, and it doesn't matter, like, how comfortable you are with your coworkers or whatever. I got a speeding ticket a few years ago when I was living in Ligonier, and I was very close with the judge and her clerks there at mm-hmm. the magistrate, where I had to go to try and get this speeding ticket reduced. And I invited some of the clerks to my wedding. Like, I was very close with them. They were, like, my little Ligonier friends. And I wore a suit to the hearing for my speeding mm-hmm. ticket, and I walked in and they said hello to me, and the police officer was there, and he was like, oh, you know her? And so he knew that he would probably be giving me a reduced fine at that point, because the judge mm-hmm. knew me well. But when I walked into the courtroom or hearing room or whatever, she was like, oh, you're wearing a suit. And I was like, well, I respect what you do here. And she was like, you would be surprised what people walk in wearing. But, like, that was a big deal to her that I, like, you know, because I would go there in jeans for my job because it was a casual one. But for this important hearing that I had to go to, I dressed up because that's a part of being a professional.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think that's a good point, too. Yeah. I don't know. And I think remembering all this stuff, and like you said, it is just being professional. Like, if you're just professional and respect people in the workplace or everywhere, then you do have a lot more, I don't know, weight with people and get a lot more respect back.
I think also, like, I really look a lot about, I look at people that I feel like have a lot of presence or who I respect a lot. And I feel like you can learn a lot from how people are.
Yeah.
I don't know if that, I mean, you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, no, I get that. I think my dad is, like, one of the prime examples I can think of who has always been calm and collected in the face of, like, problems or crises.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think about the way he reacts to stuff a lot, or, like, just staying together and just thinking it through without, like, reacting emotionally. And again, like, I don't get it perfect all the time. It's always, like, practice, I think, and sometimes I get it wrong and get discouraged or, like, make a mistake or whatever. But yeah, I think you can definitely look to people that you listen to and that you think, you know, that you see other people listen to, or you notice that they have a lot of weight to throw around and see what they do differently.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I feel like I learned more from watching people. Like, and I felt like that with parties too. Like, I was so scared to like host my own party, until I went to a Christmas party a few years ago, and then I saw how they handled it and how poised they were throughout the whole party and how classy it was. And it wasn't necessarily like a very expensive affair, but it was just like everyone was having fun and they just like had it set up perfectly. And like, I used that as like confidence to have my own party.
Yeah.
And sort of just tried to emulate what they did, and it worked out.
Yeah. That's a good idea.
Cool. So,
yeah, we have a lot to say about presents.
Everyone needs to just act more professional and they will magically get presents.
I have a question for you.
Oh yeah.
On this topic. What do you do if you like get a nasty email? Like, how do you react to that? Like at work, not in personal life.
I feel like most of the nasty emails I've gotten have been like relatively passive aggressive. Okay. So they're not, like, outwardly nasty. And so I feel like if I get a passive-aggressive email, I usually just ignore it.
Yeah.
And I also think, like, I think that sometimes, first of all, if I get a nasty email, I probably won't reply immediately. And I probably won't reply over email. Because it's, like, a paper trail.
Yeah. Totally. And I think people, like, if you call them and say, like, hey, what's going on? How can we resolve this issue? People are shocked yeah. that you like picked up the phone to talk to you. And they're also like, when are people going to say that stuff to your face? Like, they're just not going to. Like,
right.
They're going to treat you with more respect and like be probably too embarrassed to act that way because they're like talking to you or seeing your face, you know?
Yeah.
Plus, it's just quicker and easier to just be like, can we get to the point and like tell me what's going on?
Yeah, I think phone calls are quicker. I also feel like sometimes if there's like a misunderstanding that occurred and someone like calls you out over email. This happened to me recently. Mm-hmm. Someone called me out over an email and they were wrong, but I didn't reply to it because I didn't want to look petty or argumentative. Yeah. And so I just kind of took on the attitude like, well, if this becomes a bigger issue, then I'll defend myself. But until then, I'm just going to ignore this because I don't want to look like I'm getting defensive.
I do that a lot too. And a lot of times if they like read it too quickly or misunderstood or whatever and get upset about something, but it's not critical, you know, it's like,
right.
Well, we got past the issue. It doesn't really matter. They'll get over it and realize like, either it doesn't matter or, like, they'll find out I'm not an idiot eventually. So like,
right, you know, right.
So I think that is a good point of, like, if you can ignore it or address it in a way that's not in an email. Or a lot of times, too, like, sometimes I'll get, like, outwardly nasty emails. And I just, like, ignore the tone completely and try to respond still in a really professional tone. Or, like, just not even address that part of what they were saying and like still only focus on like the problem that we need to solve or like what I need from them and just still try to be really professional. So I kind of just act like I am having like a brand new conversation and it's like not that didn't even happen, which I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, no, but I do. I think like I have to, I feel like sometimes I have to remind myself, like, I don't know what their tone was when they wrote it. And I'm probably reading it a lot harsher because I'm, you know, you're your worst critic or whatever. And so I try and just like ignore. And like that happens with text messages a lot too. Sometimes I'll get a text and I'm like, oh, what did they mean by this? And I just like pretend like they meant it happily and continue on. And if it's an issue, then I assume that they'll let me know.
Yeah, I think that's a really good tactic to take. Okay, yeah, definitely had a lot more to say about that than I thought I did.
Well, it's fascinating. I feel like it's hard. It's so hard to, like, navigate through life, but especially, like, office culture.
Yeah.
And everywhere you work is different. Like, this job that I have now is so different than anywhere I've worked, just based on, like, it's a really small office, and there's, like, a huge age difference between me and most of my coworkers. And so it's just sometimes very difficult to know what the right thing to do is.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's hard when you're starting out to learn all of this and to feel like you can talk at meetings and people want to hear what you have to say.
Yeah. It's just hard. Yeah, I think it is hard too. But I think it's important. I think it comes from also, like, having confidence in what you're saying. And if you don't have confidence, then you need to fake it.
Yeah, totally. Totally. And yeah, I think too, that just comes with, like, experience and practice. Like, you're not going to be like that. I like your first day on a new job. So, you know, it just takes a little time too.
Also, one more thing, like, one thing that I found that was really shocking was that, this woman that I used to work with, I thought that she was always, like, very poised and, like, always handled every situation very well. And one time we went out after work and she just started, like, complaining, not in an annoying way, but just, like, being really critical at work. And I had no idea she was feeling like that. And I think, like, that's the best. Like yeah. She has just as many complaints as everyone else, and she hates it too, but, like, she managed to maintain that professionalism while she was there, despite other people not being professionals.
Yeah, that's really, really impressive. Yeah.
Cool. Presence. Awesome. Yeah.
Good talk.
Lightning round?
Yeah, let's do it.
What was your favorite outfit this week?
Well, I guess I wore this outfit. I ended up – okay, so I wore this outfit to class. It's like a – it was a blue and white striped cotton skirt that I have been wearing a lot this summer because it's really easy and comfortable. And then I wore this, like, orange – I think it's houndstooth, the pattern. It was cool. like a white shirt with, like, orange – I think houndstooth on it. And kind of a big pattern. And so I wore that with a blue skirt. And I thought that was pretty cute. I was, like, mixing patterns and colors.
Do you try and dress up for class because your teacher's a cool fashion designer?
Oh, she is really cool and has cool clothes. Well, it kind of depends. Sometimes I'll go into the office and I'll go straight from work. So then I just kind of wear whatever I wore to work. And then if I'm working from home, I'll, like, try to dress up a little in, like, a casual way.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I guess I do kind of think about it. It's like I'm going to somewhere where I'm seeing a lot of people that I don't normally see, so I do kind of put more thought into my outfit.
I think that outfit sounds risky, which equates to edgy to me, which is fashion forward, so good work.
Awesome. Thank you. What was your favorite outfit?
Oh, I don't know. I'm sort of feeling blah about my clothing recently. Yesterday when I got home from work, I changed into yoga pants and a tank top because we were going up to AJ's parents to visit with his nephew who's visiting. And AJ's dad was like, "Is that what you wear to work? You look great." And I was like, "These are yoga pants. Like, this is not what I wore." But thank you. So maybe that was my favorite outfit.
I've been into sportswear lately.
What?
I've been kind of into sportswear lately of, like, a good, like, yoga pant top or, like, running shorts or something.
Yeah, I bought a couple, like, racer back shirts, but they're lace. Like, the racer back part is lace. Oh. And, like, I really like that because it's sort of dressy, but I can also wear it to the gym.
Yeah, cool.
So, yeah. What are you reading?
What am I reading? I read the first book in the Guardians of the Galaxy comic book series. I read the first volume. We went to see the movie over the weekend, and I really loved it and thought it was cute. And Michael has the book, and so he let me borrow it. So
Is the movie based on the book?
It's based on different – it's the same characters, but it's a different story.
Okay.
So I don't know. The book – I read they were, like, already a team, and the movie's kind of about, like, how they become a team and what they do. So yeah, it was like a different story, but it was the same characters and it was pretty fun to read. And then I am planning on getting the, oh, what's it called? It's the most recent book by Lev Grossman. He just published this week the last book in a trilogy. It's called The Magician's Land is the last book that just came out. And so I want to start reading that, but I'm going to try to get it from the library because I'm trying to be more like careful with my finances. And so I'm on the wait list.
But I love my library so much.
Yeah, I actually don't even have a library card yet. I'm planning on getting that soon. So technically Michael's on the wait list, but I am planning on getting a card like this weekend.
Yeah, I think it's really awesome. I have a library branch like right by my work, so I can go there on my lunch break and get books. And
oh, nice.
Yeah, it's great. It's really great.
I'm kind of struggling already with like, oh, I have to wait and like go get it instead of just like ordering it on my Kindle. But I think it will be good.
You might be able to get it on your Kindle.
I looked, actually. I looked at their electronic books, and I think there's a waitlist for that, too. But I did sign up for some books on the waitlist for the electronic thing. So I actually looked at The Silkworm, too, that Robert Galbraith / J.K. Rowling book that came out, like, kind of recently. And there's, like, 100 people waiting for it or something like that.
I didn't know she just came out with another book.
Yeah, it's called The Silkworm, and it's that detective series that she's doing.
I should probably read the other two. I own both of them and haven't read them.
Oh, the Casual Vacancy?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I'll get on that.
What are you reading?
So we didn't go to the zoo because it was like threatening rain and super humid. So we went to the Dinosaur Museum. But before that, we went to this used bookstore in Oakland where the University of Pittsburgh is. And I picked up this giant Martha Stewart book called like The Homemaker's Handbook or something.
Wow.
And it's basically like a reference book about how to run your home and like how to do small repairs and kind of like cleaning schedules and organization, which sounds so nerdy, but I love it so much.
No, that sounds so cool.
Yeah, I really, really like it. I've just started it. So she goes like room by room of things that, you know, like some of the stuff is like she claims that you should vacuum your vents out once a week. Like, no, I'm not going to vacuum. I don't think I've never vacuumed my vents. I don't really plan to vacuum my vents. So some of it is, a little bit crazy, but I think like having a cleaning schedule is really important.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of interesting the way she organizes it and stuff like that. So I'm working my way through that book. And then I also got a French cooking book. It's called La Cuisine. And it's similar to the Julia Child volumes of French cooking. So I'm interested in that too.
Awesome. Speaking of cooking, what are you cooking lately?
So I've been watching a ton of Top Chef,
mm-hmm.
and it's awesome, but it really makes me feel like I don't know what the hell I'm doing. I'm, like, pretty good at making delicious food, but I'm not very good. I don't really know the fundamentals of cooking. And, like, my knife skills are okay because I've chopped so many things, but like I didn't really know how to properly hold a knife, like things like that. So I've decided to try and learn the fundamentals of cooking, and I feel like the starting point of that are called the mother sauces, and there's six different sauces that sort of are the base for all other sauces. And so tonight I made bechamel, which is one of the mother sauces, and it's just basically milk, flour, and butter. And that's like the basis for most of the cheese sauces that exist in the world.
Wow.
So I made a Gruyere bechamel chicken and mushroom bake, and it was delicious.
That sounds amazing.
Yeah, I took pictures, so, you know, maybe one day when I start writing my blog again, I will post it.
Awesome.
What are you cooking lately?
Oh my gosh. Pretty much nothing. Nothing. I don't know. I struggle a lot with what to make for food and what to eat, and I just struggle a lot with it. So today, I had some frozen, like, pasta dish that was actually pretty delicious, and, like, a bagel with peanut butter and bananas. Like, those are my biggest meals today. So don't be like me, people. Eat
the frozen pasta, are those, oh, what are they called?
Mine was Bertolli.
Bertolli? Yeah, I think you introduced me to those in college, and they're wonderful.
I like having something in the freezer that is easy.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you just don't feel like it, and today I didn't feel like doing that much, and so I just made this, like, frozen thing, but it was good. It was, like, a chicken marsala, I think, with, like, I don't know, green beans, like, mushroom and chicken and potatoes, and it was.
Oh, yeah, we've definitely had that one.
I liked it a lot.
For a while, I was getting those a lot because they're so easy and quick, and you just, like, dump it in a pot, and you turn the stove on, and then dinner is ready.
Yeah, it was really quick. I thought it would even take longer, but it was only, like, 10 minutes.
Yeah, I feel like that's a really important skill to master, though, is, like, realizing that, like, you're not – like, I tend to be overambitious. So, like, the idea that I'm going to cook every night for dinner is just, like, that's never going to happen.
Yeah.
And so, like, realizing that and preparing for that is important.
Yeah, that's true, I think.
Cool. Where can people find you on the – where can people find your online presence, Ray?
My online presence is at raysdays.com. I'm on Twitter at rclnewton and on Instagram at raynewton.
I'm at evanlovinblog.com and at Julesy on Twitter and at Jules Frainer on Instagram. And are we able to link to the article on our show notes, or is it secret?
We can put up the link, but I think the Wall Street Journal has, like, a paywall. So, unfortunately, I don't have, like, a PDF or anything of it, but we can still post the link. Or if you guys want to pick up, like, a paper from August 6th, if that's even possible by the time we post it. But, yeah, we'll put up the link anyway, just for those who have access to the Wall Street Journal.
Yeah, we'll post the picture of this chart, too, of how to be professional. Mm-hmm. Cool. Well, good talk.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening,
everybody.
Bye.
Online presence. Bye. Bye.